A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. I am overwhelmed and excited by the case that I have for you today.
I'm actually excited too. You just told me 30 seconds ago, and my response was, this is super requested, and I know nothing.
Yes. So Jenna, Julio, Tracy, Allison, those are some of the requests that were sent in to us. It might have even been mentioned a couple of times in passing on social media about the case.
Yep, I agree with you.
So I definitely wanted to touch on it. It's a case that's right up my alley, which is like the 40s. So, I mean, it was like a no-brainer for me. It was going to be my case. I knew about the case a little bit. If you put into Google, like, famous missing persons cases or whatever, this one will almost always come up on any list. And without going into theories initially, I could just say that I had certain thoughts about it, which made me never deep dive into it.
Okay.
And now that I've read into it, I'm like, okay, so I see why it's so interesting, and I see why my jump to a particular conclusion doesn't always work, that, you know, there might be some other things out there. So I'm really glad I did it. I was super overwhelmed by the information out there. There is a ton. There's a ton of YouTube. There's a ton of articles. And I just want you to know that I picked delicately the stuff that I'm choosing. And of course, because the biggest part of our podcast is the theory piece, that, you know, you have to tell the story in a certain amount of time so that we have plenty of time to do the theories piece. So I know that there's stuff that might be overlooked or briefly talked about. I did so with intention. So, if you don't have anything else, Melissa, I can jump on.
No, I'm excited. Jump in.
All right. So, like I said, I'm covering the case of the missing Sauter children. Jenny and George Sauter were both born in Italy, and Jenny came over to the U.S. as a child, while George came a little bit later. So I want to make it clear that they didn't know each other. They're not from the same family or anything like that. Just it so happens that they're both from Italy and came over to the U.S. at different times. So George came over with a brother. And quickly after they went through Ellis Island Customs, George's brother went back. But George settled and stayed. And he actually settled in Pennsylvania, gaining employment, and later began his own business. So he was pretty fortunate to have kind of gotten off on the right foot here. During this time, he fell in love with, and married Jenny. Now, he knew her from the area. I believe she was a shopkeeper's daughter. So they probably just encountered each other in passing and fell in love. When they married, they settled in Fayetteville, which is in West Virginia. This area was home to a community of Italian immigrants, and they were involved in the community. They had a decent home, and they were well-known and respected. They did pretty well, and as you know, like, when you're in a community of people that have probably had the same experiences as you, such as immigrating from a different country to the present one that you're in, you have a common ground, you share experiences, and you understand one another. So, like I said, they were well-known and respected. Although George was known to be outspoken and opinionated, I don't really feel like this is it can be thought of as like a negative thing, but I kind of think of this as positive, that he cares about his community, he has ideas and thoughts and wants to share it with other people, and he was opinionated a lot about politics. In this case, his opposition to the Italian dictator Mussolini, which I don't think sat well with everybody. So George and Jenny went on to have 10 children between them, ranging from, well, one son was off at war, and their last child was actually an infant or a very young child. So there was some distance between them. And I know that 10 children seems like a lot, and it is a lot, don't get me wrong, but it's not as if it was unusual in this time period. People had many children, and that's just kind of the way it was back then. On December 24th of 1945, so Christmas Eve, late evening was approaching, and everyone but one of their children were hunkered down at home. Like I said, one of their children was off at war. Jenny was ready to head off to bed, but some of her children wanted to stay up just a little while longer. Jenny hesitated a little bit, but she agreed, and it was fine. They could stay up, provided that they locked up and shut off the lights. Everyone agreed. At about 12:30 a.m., so this is the beginning of December 25th, the phone rang. And this was unusual. Not a lot of people are calling a Sauter home in the middle of the night. Jenny answered it, and it seemed like a wrong number. She said that it sounded like there were glasses clinking, maybe some laughing, and then someone had asked for an unfamiliar name, and that was it, and they hung up. And Jenny went back to bed. And she's kind of falling back asleep. And while doing this, she could see a light from under the door. So she goes and checks and finds the doors unlocked and her children are not around. She's maybe a little bit annoyed because she specifically asked the children to lock up and turn off the lights, but not really enough to wake up the children and, I don't know, yell at them. So then she went again to lay back down to sleep. And then she hears a bang on the roof, followed kind of like by a rolling noise. So almost like when you drop something on an inclined landing and then it rolls down and off. And that was it. And while weird, you know, like she didn't think much of it and she fell back asleep. She dismissed anything that could have been wrong. An hour later, smoke filled the home, waking them up and leaving them to have to run outside immediately. When everyone got outside, it was quickly determined that 5 of the children weren't there. Now, I just want to say that when they left the house, the fire was already pretty bad. Like, I believe I read that while running out, some of the children's hair was singed. So it wasn't...
Oh, wow.
It wasn't as if there was any time to waste at all in getting out. And George attempted to get back into the home. He went and he got a ladder, except he found that the ladder where it was usually left, it was not there. And then he had 2 trucks, and they're from his business, parked, and he was going to utilize the trucks to hoist himself onto the roof, and neither of the trucks started. He attempted to manually get back in the house, and he severely injured himself and remained unsuccessful in getting back in the home. Simultaneously, one child ran to a neighbor to call the fire department, which they could not reach. It sounded to me as if they didn't answer, which...
What?
I mean, it's 1945.
How do you find all the cases where the law enforcement closed?
I guess I have a thing for that. But, I mean, in the 40s, I don't think they...
That's fair.
...had the wherewithal or the systems or the technology to ensure that these things don't happen. So then they ran to the fire chief, and for some reason at this point, it's unclear exactly why the department didn't make it to the ash and rubble of the home until 9 a.m. So
that's horrifying.
Just to recap, Jenny gets a phone call at 12:30. She ends up going back to sleep. She wakes up an hour later, so this puts it at... Let's just say, for fairness, 1:45 in the morning, okay?
Okay.
The fire burned, and no one came to rescue them until 9 a.m. So when I say they came to ash rubble, they really did come to ash and rubble. It was quickly determined that the children likely perished in the fire, the five that were in the home. Upon investigation, no remains were actually found in the fire, so the children were never recovered. And the cause of the fire seemed to point to faulty wiring, but many things didn't sit right. And upon taking more into account about the fire and the origins and everything, more questions came than answers. And the family's rightful outspokenness gave the story clout, and people came forward, and more people had questions, just as the family did. So looking back on the events that occurred leading up to the fire, the family recalled a life insurance salesman coming to the home. He at one point became so enraged, for what reason, I don't know. He told the Sodders they would burn and their children, or the house would burn and the children would be destroyed.
Well, that's kind of ominous. When did that happen?
Within weeks or months of the fire. However, I will say that one YouTube video that I watched, the narrator made some really interesting points that perhaps this did happen, but that over the years, it's really just transformed into something bigger than what it was. Perhaps he said something similar, and then the more the story got told, the more ominous and sinister it sounded. And I thought to myself, that's really interesting. You know, that could be a possibility. So then another thing happened months before. They also had someone out to check the wiring to the house and all the electrical, make sure it was updated and safe. And it was deemed in fine working order. But then a man shortly after that came out to the home, and he seemed as if it wasn't like a prompted visit. This guy was like almost trying to sell his services. He's like, I checked out your home and this house is going to burn if you don't have it fixed, which confused George because he's like, well, who are you? Where'd you come from? And I just recently had my house checked and it was fine. So
what are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about? And like, could it be that this guy just came out and was trying to make a buck by kind of duping the family and saying they needed to pay him money? I don't know.
I mean, I think that's possible.
Right.
But keep going.
Lastly, some of the Sodder children reported a man parked on a route they walked as they walked home from school, watching them. Many things came to light that gave the Sodders hope that their children hadn't died. So all of the stuff that I just told you was the stuff that was kind of leading up to the fire. This stuff came about after the fire and throughout the investigation. And at first, the Sodders really did believe their children had perished in the fire. But then these stories or these witnesses would come forward, and then they were like, well, maybe our children didn't actually die in the fire.
And they found no bodies.
Yes, so they found no bodies, and we can get into that a little bit later. So first, it seemed as if the telephone lines were cut and not that they actually burned in the fire, which was suspicious, obviously. Secondly, why were the lights on if the faulty wiring caused the fire? Because the thought is, and I'm not an expert by any means, is that if something had gone wrong with the fire, with the wiring, then the lights would have malfunctioned and not worked. But not only were the lights on when Jenny got up after that phone call and noticed the lights on, I believe witnesses said that they saw lights on in the home as the home burned. So that wouldn't make any sense. Then, why wouldn't the truck start? He had two trucks that he used for work, and attempting to start both of them was unsuccessful when he wanted to use them to hoist himself onto the roof. Where was the ladder? It's reported that George went to get the ladder so that he could get access to the loft room that the children would have been in. Nothing. The ladder was not where it usually should have been. Then later, one of their younger children had found something in the yard. It was like some type of, I think it was like a plastic device or something along those lines. And George was able to identify it as part of like a piece of a pineapple bomb or something like that, which only led him to be more suspicious that it had something to do with maybe the start of the fire. Then there are sightings. The first one is the very night of the fire. Someone is driving by, and one of the passengers in the vehicle states that she saw a car with the missing children inside of it while the house was burning. The second sighting was Christmas Day at a diner somewhere in the Charleston area, so not too far from Fayetteville, and that she actually served the children breakfast that day. Another sighting came much later, where someone reported they saw one of his older daughters, Betty, in New York, and she was photographed, I think for like the newspaper or something, and when George, because George followed up on all the leads, went up to New York to check it out, people refused to talk to him in order for him to make a valid identification of his daughter. Some other weird things, and when I say weird things happened, I'm not even covering half of them. I just had to pick the ones that made probably the most sense to cover. So the family hired a private eye, and this private eye was able to determine that the life insurance salesman that had actually threatened the family was on the coroner's jury that deemed the fire accidental. And lastly...
Well, that's convenient.
Convenient, yeah, right? Lastly, it was probably 20 years later, it was in the 60s, Jenny and George received a picture in the mail. Now, the envelope was sent to only Jenny, not George, with no return address, only postmark from Kentucky. And when she opened it up, she sees a picture of a grown adult male. And as soon as her and her husband saw the picture, they identified it as their son, Louis, or Louis. And no one had ever come forward. They don't know where it came from. I believe they went to Kentucky to determine the origins of the picture, and they couldn't find anything to help them figure out who was in the picture and, in fact, was it their son. George, like I said, followed up on numerous leads, physically going to places to figure out where his children were. He at one point heard one of his daughters was in a convent in the Midwest, and he went to check that out. Nothing came from it. I mean, nothing came from any of George's searches, but the sightings never stopped. People would constantly say that they saw one or several of the Sodder children. And the Sodders actually set up a billboard on the side of the road in their hometown, which remained for at minimum 30 years. I don't know how long. Saying that their children were missing, and it appears as though they perished in the fire, but they don't believe that they perished in the fire, and if anyone has any information to contact them. So Jenny and George have passed away. Most of the remaining children have passed on. There is, in the most recent articles I read, the youngest daughter who continues to carry on the search. I'm not sure if current day she has passed on at this point yet either, but she did remain committed to figuring out what happened to her siblings. And yeah, we have no idea what happened to these kids.
So how many kids were in the house again? Break this down for me.
There were 9 children in the house.
Okay, and then of the 9, how many were accounted for?
4.
Okay, were they... like, in order, age order, is the youngest 4, the oldest 4?
No, not exactly. My understanding is that the home had, I believe it was like, I don't know if it was bedrooms, because I've seen the bedroom that the children were in is described as a loft. So the children split rooms, and I don't know if it was male, female, or not. I don't think so, but I'm not 100% sure. So... no, they were not split up by age.
Okay.
And then I do know that the youngest child was sleeping in the crib in which Jenny and George slept. I believe one child fell asleep on the couch and was left there. So that might leave 2, which were in a separate bedroom.
Okay. Is the police, like, statement that they all perished in the fire?
Yes. However, the issue is, and this has been replicated and talked about probably the most throughout the years. So there was not remnants, not a single remnant of human remains from that fire. There wasn't the smell, and I'm sorry, this is crass, but it's true. There wasn't a single smell of human flesh burning. And police said, well, you know, the fire was so hot, everything pretty much, you know, went. But there were items recovered from the home that weren't all the way burned or destroyed. So that led skeptical others to say, well, if, I don't know, and I'm just throwing this out there, like, my toaster didn't burn, why would there be nothing left to my children?
Right. So the not having bones there is definitely a pause. What are the other theories?
So the theories are, yeah, they died in the fire. Another theory is that George's outspoken nature got him noticed for the wrong reasons, and they kidnapped the children, kidnapped and or killed the children due to that. George.
But why kidnap five and not the rest?
Well, if you want to start with that theory, it could have been an opportunity of convenience. Maybe it was just the children were all in one room and it was easier. Whereas the other children, it would have required them going through the house to find the other children.
Right, but, well, first of all, hold on. Didn't you say she thought they were playing upstairs?
When Jenny went to bed, three children were downstairs, and they wanted to stay up for a little while. So, when Jenny came back down because she noticed the lights were on, one of the daughters was still sleeping on the couch.
Okay. But then, I mean, to take five children, you have to know that you're going to have some sort of control over them.
Absolutely. On the other hand, they're younger, so that control might not be limited to a lot. Like, one person and one gun might do it.
And you have to assume no one is going to scream or say anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would assume you'd have to catch them off guard, which makes sense. They were likely asleep.
Okay, and what are the other theories, though?
George immigrated here from Sicily. And when he got here, you know, a lot of people will say, well, what brought you here? Or, you know, tell us about your journey. And he was never really very clear or didn't care to talk about what brought him to America. So people wonder, was he involved in something that he was kind of running from? And then someone came after him or his children.
That's a lot of speculation, though.
Well, yeah, and that's actually my thought, too. I'm like, he could have had his heart broken, or, like, I think he was maybe 13, or he was a teenager when he came here, but in all fairness, like, it could have been something like a sibling died, or, like, someone broke his heart, and he just wanted to start over, and it's really just sad to talk about. And
yeah, I feel like that's a lot of leaps you'd have to take.
Right, I agree, and today with social media, and I'm actually not saying this is a good or bad thing because it's different in every situation, but people share a lot of information about mental health, the darker spaces of our psyche, if you will, for lack of better words, their feelings on politics, you name it. Like, we're really open in society today. But in 1945, whatever happened at home or in your personal life, you don't air your dirty laundry. So,
I mean, I think that was happening in 1985 still.
100% agreed. So the fact that he doesn't talk about his past or inner workings doesn't really surprise me and doesn't even scream alarming to me. So I don't know. And what he's a young guy. What would he had to have been involved in?
At 13.
In all fairness, to have accomplished getting that attention for someone from another country to follow here and destroy your life.
Destroy your life like 30 years later.
Also true. Also very valid. I have to question if some of the people that think of these theories or bring them to light have really done the math about how this works. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Because, like I said, for me, it's the having to wait, you know, however many years it was.
Right. Right. So, I mean, those are probably the biggest theory, the three biggest theories that there are. Another one, I guess you can put up there, and I don't know if you can lump it in with someone having an ulterior motive or something against George for his outspoken nature, but that they were kidnapped and kind of sold for adoption. Not, guys, I'm not doing the sex trafficking thing, I swear. But
why, last time you were, people, everyone supported you in the last episode.
Well, I appreciate that, but I really am not going on that tangent. But it's speculated that they could have been kidnapped, like they could have seen this large family, several kids, and saw it as a cash opportunity to sell these children to families that wanted to adopt children that couldn't have any of their own.
Yeah, that actually, to me, is a more valid theory. I was saying, I listened to a podcast, I don't remember, it was a long time ago, about a woman that would essentially steal kids and sell them. And that was a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think I've heard nurses that have done that.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. So it's not something that's unheard of. But if we go back to someone having something against George, I have a lot of questions about that. Because, first, if you're going to hurt George, hurt George. You got a problem with what he's saying? Don't you want to hurt him?
And you're not going to take five children. Like, that's a lot to handle. Even if you're, and forgive me for sounding crass, but even if you're just going to take them to kill them, five is a lot.
Again, yes, absolutely. And also, if you think that you are, that you need to make George pay for something, he's been so outspoken and you really disagree with him, don't you want him to know that you messed with the wrong person, basically?
Yes.
Not that some of the children died in a fire and that's all there is to it. Just usually when you're mad at someone and you want to get back at them, you want them to know it's you. Or you want them to know that you've done something to
think
anger
it's
someone.
You. Yes, you want them to, like, in their head be like, it's got to be this, but not enough to prove it.
Exactly. And then if it was about money or something, wouldn't you use a ransom note? Wouldn't you demand money from that person?
I mean, I think that the everything that happened after the fact, the phone line being cut, the truck's not working, the ladder being gone, to me, are tick marks in the intentional abduction.
So that's a little bit where I go to, although some of these things I can write off as a community that has heard this story, that thinks they see something, and maybe it's a different day or a different time, or like all these random things that happen are really just coincidences.
I don't believe in that many coincidences when a crime is in progress or in question, I guess.
So you're leaning a little bit towards like a kidnapping.
Yeah, I think I have to because, like I said, I don't believe in that many coincidences.
So take sightings out of this, because while I believe that every sighting should always be followed up on, we do know that there is some bias to that. So forget that. And then we're left with the phone call. We're left with, let's see, the ladder and the vehicles. And
was the phone call ever investigated?
I don't know to what degree, but it appeared as though it was just a wrong number. Although Jenny would have had to bring it up, and it's probably still relevant to the rest investigation now. I guess I wouldn't know how it would be relevant. If you want to get away with kidnapping children, why would you risk waking someone up? How could they have bet that she was going
to
fall back
asleep?
Or to
see if they sound like they were awake? Yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking that maybe, like, they called to see if she was already asleep. But like you said, you don't know if she can fall right back asleep. Like, you don't know what that is like.
And then you're likely to wake up a baby who's sleeping in a crib. I mean, it just doesn't seem thoughtful. I just suspect it was someone who was probably partying on Christmas Eve and trying to call someone.
And dialed the wrong number. Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's just, where is kind of
cool. Where do you end up?
Well, hang on. Before I get there, then we have everyone gets out after the fire. George looks for the ladder. I just have to wonder, with 10 children, or let's just say some children, if they had used the ladder simply for something else and didn't put it back appropriately.
I mean, maybe, except for the ladder's not something you can hide.
Well, that's true. So maybe that's
Let's say you had a garage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't in the garage.
Right.
You take a quick walk around the house. If it's not there, then... it was taken.
So, yeah, that's one I probably can't explain away. Now, I guess I have a lot of questions about the trucks that I've never seen answered, which is, I know that he used them recently and they were in fine working order. But I just wonder, in December, like, when was the last time they were started? Could it have been a battery issue? It was cold. I don't really know or think that it was determined that anything was taken or cut within the cars, or the trucks, rather. But I could easily say that there could be an explanation. If they weren't started in a week, maybe the gas lines were frozen. Maybe the battery was dead.
Again, that's a lot of coincidence for me.
It's a lot of coincidence. And I do have an issue with there being no remains. But what I understand is, I guess, most people think that it would be very unusual that there's nothing left, experts, I mean, but that there is a small window of possibility. But that's not just one human. That's five of them. Five people that left nothing behind, no trace of life. But then, then it's like, okay, so kidnapping. And then I start thinking just about how bold that is. Why not do it when they're coming home from school?
And taking five kids is a lot.
They walk alone home from school. Why Christmas Eve? Why the middle of the night?
I mean, except for the fact that, like, it would totally destroy someone's Christmas.
But if you're just in it for the money, you're not really caring about how little or how much you destroy someone's life and when.
But if they're using it to sell the children, like... getting a new kid on Christmas Day is almost a Christmas wish come true.
Maybe, but I doubt that they give discounts or gifts or anything. And again, I'm not trying to sound crass, but realistically, like, we give you a kid, this is the cost, and that's it. You don't get a discount or anything because it's Christmas.
No, but I mean, they might want to pay more to get the baby by Christmas.
Almost like, sadly, like a quota, like trying to get...
No, like the person buying the child. If they're desperate to have a child.
Yep.
And they can say, okay, I'll get it to you like by March. And it's, you know, $10,000. I'm making up ridiculous numbers.
Okay.
But if you want a baby by Christmas, I might be able to do it, but it's $15,000.
Okay, so with all that, why would at least the older Sauter children have never come forward and say, hey, yeah, I was one of the Sauter children?
Why is Aisha DeGree still missing?
Well, I think our theories are a little bit different. Like, she's held hostage.
You don't think if they were sold to another family and being adopted, they were brainwashed and held hostage?
It's possible. But
the family's not going to be like, hey, I paid for you and, you get to keep the same name and say that you were kidnapped.
That's fair. But also, I guess I have, that thought about one of the children was 14, I think Maurice. And I guess you think you're going to adopt a 14-year-old child and have him live an idealistic life under a different name, knowing full well that, I don't know. I understand the younger children. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
none of it makes any sense to me. So I'm gonna.
It does. Like, yes, I get brainwashing, but if you're going to adopt a child to someone, I don't think that the adoptive parents are as savvy about brainwashing than someone who has a sinister motive, because they just want a kid. Or is that naive?
I don't know. I truthfully don't know. So I guess my question to you is, where, like I asked you before, where do you end up?
So the reason I didn't look into this case a lot sooner was what I had heard. I was just like, these are parents that had unfortunate, awful, horrible grief and just wanted to believe that their children were out there somewhere and that they likely did die in that fire. And considering kidnapping, it's likely, but at this point, they're all grown and probably passed away, so maybe we won't know, but they never came forward as adults. They were never identified, nothing. I know that sounds so backwards because of my thoughts on a case like Aisha Degree. I get it. But I guess I look at it as, if they were adopted and these people really wanted children, would they have been so sinister as to tell them to keep their mouth shut forever and that their old life didn't exist or something like that? Did they feel threatened forever? Maybe the younger ones, but the older ones? I don't know. That leaves me confused. So your question is unanswered. I get it. I think without overthinking, I do believe they died in the fire. Oh, but here's another thing, Melissa, is that,
do they find any sort of bones or anything in?
No, nothing, nothing, zero, zero. But here's the other thing is that unless the smoke caused them to be exposed to carbon monoxide and they died either in their sleep or very quickly after, another weird thing to me is that they weren't banging on the window. They weren't screaming out of the window or trying to break the glass and screaming for help.
Yeah, I think they weren't in the house.
Oh. And then I'm like, am I just overthinking it?
Beyond that, I don't know, but I don't think they were in the house.
I'm so torn. I'm 50-50 on this, but I do not think it was any, like, mafia activity or that George had made anyone mad. It might have just been an opportunity to kidnap children for money. And maybe they weren't even planning on all five, but maybe they realized that they could get five under control. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't like any of it. Yeah, but yes. Yes. If you can control the oldest one, the younger ones will probably fall in line.
Yeah, maybe so, because I think it was between 5 and 14 were the children that disappeared.
So now I'm going to go watch everything I can on this, because I was never, I knew nothing about it, but I knew it was an older case in the 40s, and that's not my cup of tea. But now I'm really curious.
Yeah, and there's so many details I left out. I mean, when you think about it, it's really a half a century old case. So, of course, things continue to come out time after time. Like, there was even a private investigator that the family allegedly hired that went to Kentucky or went to investigate one of the sightings and never came back. So, of course, people...
What?
People speculate that someone made him disappear when... I didn't really cover that theory because I'm like, well, he took the money and ran, probably.
Oh, you're probably right there.
So there's a ton more out there. I stress again, like, there's just not enough time to cover the whole story and everything that happened and talk about some relevant theories in detail. But go watch all the stuff. And I'm 50-50, yeah. I think. So if someone can sway me to one of these other two theories or even another one, let me know.
Yeah, I'd like to know what everyone thinks too. share on social media, DM us, whatever you want to do. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, last week was really great. I think that there was a lot of arguments for one theory or another, and I really always take something from your theories. It's literally every week.
Oh, me too.
At least one comment is something I haven't heard of or thought of.
100%. I feel the same way. I'm always like, ooh, that was good.
Right.
And I love Patreon that, like, lays out everything for us.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Love it.
All right, guys.
All right. Well, we will see you next week with an all-new episode. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.